religion, pop culture.
Two great tastes that taste great together.
Previously on Popping Collars.
My experience, particularly lately, has been that the world just moves so fast for people that the folks that I work with in my congregation, you know, it just seems like we're all the time just trying to catch up with what we know to be true and what we understand about the world. And about the time we've got it figured out, boom, something else just comes crashing in and the whole apple cart's upset and we have to go about the business of figuring it out, negotiating it again. And about the time maybe that's settled, you know, something else happens. And I very much feel like, you know, I'm pastoring a crowd of people. I'm trying to shepherd a group that's just being beset on all sides by so many different things that are unpredictable and, you know, couldn't have hardly been imagined perhaps just a few years ago.
Welcome to Popping Collars, where pop culture and religion come together and form a beautiful, gorgeous child that we like to call our podcast.
Oh,
hi, I'm Greg Knight, the man with the best introductions on the planet.
I think you're going to be, you're not winning the introductions. You're not winning that.
And with me today are the regulars of Popping Collars, the ones that you have come to expect, the ones that you are upset if they are not with us. Betsy Gonzalez from our nation's capital.
Hello, hello.
Close to our nation's capital. Close enough.
Striking distance.
That we can call it the nation's
capital.
Let's
call it striking distance.
And Liz Easton from Nebraska. Hi, Liz.
Hi.
Today we are talking about competition. And how my life is better than everybody else's, and how my church is the best church to go to, and the teams that I pull for in sports ball are the best sports ball teams that there are in the world. We are at a crux in our country right now of just a spirit of competition all over the place. World Series starting tomorrow, Tuesday, football season in full swing, college and pro football. Basketball season starting up, hockey season starting up. Basically, if there's a puck, if there's a ball, it's out there. It's being played right now. And with that comes a lot of tribal ideas, the sense that, you know, it's us versus everybody else. It's the we. It's the we that we claim ourselves. I claim to be a member of the Green Bay Packers Nation, even though I haven't set foot in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And yet, I say we all the time whenever I see that big G in that cold weather. And I'm in Florida. I couldn't stand it in Green Bay. I wouldn't be able to survive. And yet, those are my people. And that's my team. And the spirit sort of takes over. And it makes people do crazy things. And it makes people say crazy things. And we certainly see it cross over from the sports world into the religious world, into the tribes that we claim spiritually. And we're going to try to unravel that a little bit. But first, tell me a little bit about your backgrounds, you guys, when it comes to your sports allegiances and the places where you are and how the communities that you're in sort of see the spirit of competition. Betsy, we'll start with you.
Well, I've lived in D.C. since the late 90s with a brief stint in the Bay Area for seminary. But I think where my spiritual home is in terms of sports is the southeastern United States, because I'm from the great state of Alabama. And so growing up immersed in SEC competition, you know, not only football, but other sports as well. And having a dad who grew up in the Big Ten, that it's really been about college athletics, aside from my great love of the Los Angeles Lakers. Like, that's my Green Bay Packers. I love the Lakers. I watched the Steve Winwood back in the High Life again, highlight reel from the 1985 game series with the Celtics, like over and over again in my VCR, because Larry Bird was the devil and Magic Johnson and all the Lakers were awesome. So I think I have a heart for sports because I love the communal nature that it brings out in people, and let's get together and do this together. But the South is really what has shaped my kind of view in how sports can shape you as an individual, you know, the flags you hang outside your house, the clothes you wear, what you name your kids. Mm-hmm. So, absolutely. You know, that's my angle.
We just lost the whole Northeast for the rest of this podcast, but that's okay.
I'm sorry.
We don't need Larry Bird fans listening to this podcast anyway. Liz, so you're in Nebraska, so I imagine that college football is, well, what is it like?
College football is the religion of Nebraska. It absolutely is. The Nebraska Cornhuskers are everything for us. And it's pretty serious. Like, I learned that quickly. I was not a big sports fan, and I thought on Sunday morning I could come to church and it would be kind of cute that, like, I didn't know who won the game. Like, oh, I'm not from here. And it's not cute. It's actually disrespectful and rude, and it's not participating in the culture of the community. And I think a lot of that is because Nebraska is geographically a huge state. It's like 450 miles across and full of all different kinds of regional identities. And Nebraska football is just a rallying point for people. It's a thing that, you know, if you show up at an event, you might not have a lot in common with people, but you can talk about Nebraska football. And now I'm totally a Nebraskan. I know on Saturday mornings when I get dressed, I'm wearing Cornhusker clothing, especially if I'm going out in public.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's funny. You know, the biggest rise that I ever saw someone get out of a parish. So we have a friend in common. I'm going to name drop Stephen McHale. He's out in the Bay Area. We had his wife on the podcast not too long ago. But the biggest rise I ever saw anyone get out of a parish, I think it was Advent, because they do purple Advent at the parish that he was working at, and I was interning.
As opposed to blue Advent, right? Blue Advent.
Exactly, as opposed to blue Advent. And I was doing field education at the parish that he was working at, and I remember they had the purple vestments and, you know, the frontal and all that stuff up. And Washington had just beat Cal the day before in football. And Stephen said, oh, well, I'm glad we're all celebrating Washington's victory yesterday. And I mean, that place just came unglued. It was like he had said, well, I'm just going to do my laundry in the baptismal font now, you guys. I mean, it was really crazy. But I mean, that's just kind of, people identify with that. And that's what happens. Like, once you identify with something, it becomes you. And any attack that's made against that institution, anything, all of a sudden you go crazy, right? I mean, that's how I experience it.
One of the pieces of advice I was given right after I became a priest was from the priest that I was working with, my boss, was never make fun of what people care about. Like, it just sounds so basic, but just don't make fun of the things that matter to people, because they actually matter. And I've seen clergy who come into the Diocese of Nebraska who will make fun of Nebraska football or sort of intentionally root for an opponent or something like that. And people don't like it. And it's not even that they don't like it because they're being too competitive or they're identifying with something that's silly, but because it legitimately matters to them. And here's someone in their community just taking a shot at it.
Yeah, so. Sorry, Celtics fans. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I feel really bad. But no, I think that some of that comes from, you know, it's the anxiety over lack of knowledge. So mm-hmm. What do I do? I'm going to make fun of them.
Oh.
You know, I'm just going to kind of, I'm unfamiliar. So I'm going to, you know, cast some stones and kind of, who really takes that seriously? Because I don't know enough about it, right?
Or like, so. I'm a priest and I read books.
Oh, God.
You don't read enough books. Why do you want to fall? You should be reading a book.
Right.
I hate that attitude.
Yeah, I know.
But I mean, so that's at play across the board, though, and that's where it gets dangerous. I mean, you're right, Betsy. This speaking out of ignorance, that's where all of a sudden you start to get into issues of, well, it's my way or the highway. Like, either you're on my side or you're against me, and that's where you start getting into really bad territory. So I'm not much of a soccer fan, I have to admit. Last summer with the World Cup, like, the country was gripped in this sort of World Cup fever, this soccer fever, and that's fine. I was okay with it. I didn't understand it, and I didn't participate in it. But I think part of my reservations when it comes to soccer is the hooliganism. Is that a word? Hooliganism? That comes across from, especially European soccer clubs, where, I mean, just riots breaking out in the stands, really horrible things happening. And I know that probably happens in American stadiums across the country,
does.
Too.
Yeah, let's have some LSU players throw whole cans of beer Tennessee bus when it pulls. I mean, it happens everywhere.
I'd rather blame Europe. But,
oh, don't look at home. Don't look too close.
But you know what I'm saying? You give in to your worst tendencies when you fully identify with something to the point that the other becomes a threat to you. You know, as a Carolina fan, the other for me is the Duke Blue Devils. And honestly, like, there was a time when I felt just sort of queasy to my stomach, even driving through Durham, because I was too close to the school that I hated so much.
Wow.
Now, why would I have a physical reaction to really nothing? It's just a basketball game. But it's something that's ingrained in you when you're a child. It's something you grow up with. It's something that you're told over and over again. We're these people. They're those people. We don't associate with those people.
That idea that, I like that, they're over there and I'm over here. And it's my identity that I am on this team. Like, you know, with my students, we've been doing a lot of work on Exodus and being in the wilderness and how do you make a nation and how do you make rules to garner a nation and be in covenant. And that, you know, that ancient covenant with Abraham is based on this type of treaty called a suzerain vassal treaty. And so a suzerain is the powerful kingdom or person in the agreement. And then the vassal is the weaker nation or person. And so, you know, the vassal can only have one suzerain and they make all these promises. But a lot of the basic promises are if somebody threatens a suzerain, the vassal is going to show up to protect them. But the suzerain will show up anytime the vassal's threatened. But you can only have one. You only have one suzerain if you're a vassal. So if the vassal is ever threatened, if anything ever goes wrong, you've got the big bully on the schoolyard who's behind you there to protect you all the time. So this notion that if the nation, in this case Israel, Israelites, ever threatened by anybody, Pharaoh, whoever it is, you've got God who's going to eventually come. It may take 400 years of living in country before God's really showing up. But in that form of Moses, I'm going to get you out of here and look at all of these plagues. You know, I'm totally on your side. None of this stuff is happening to you because I'm your backup. I'm your God and I'm fighting on your side. And so I'm going to get you out of here. I'm going to protect you in the wilderness. You know, all of you might not make it, but that's just details. You know, this is what we're doing. So that idea that I think that some of this, that God's on my side.
Right.
You know, if I'm winning and doing well, it means that I have pleased God and God is on my side. So then you see the flip of the narrative is whenever the Babylonians come in and totally kick the snot out of the ancient Israelites, well, somebody must have not been faithful to God. Somebody violated the treaty, so God's not here. So who's the person who's not wearing Cornhusker red on a Saturday who's let us all down because we've all got to be in it together, you know? And I think that that feeds the identity piece, that we've all got to participate in order to heighten and be a part of the identity of the group.
Liz, do you have any thoughts on us versus them mentality?
Smart.
I know.
I'm a teacher.
Just listen to Betsy talk. The whole podcast will just be Betsy talking and us saying, oh, wow.
I do think, though, that Betsy, what you said about the treaty and then violating the treaty if something goes wrong, we see that all the time in people's theology when they're facing bad things or when people that they love are facing bad things. Maybe not so much anymore, I hope. But oftentimes if something terrible happens in your life, if you're sick, someone will say like, ooh, you must have done something wrong, either faithfully, like you didn't pray enough, you didn't believe, you didn't whatever, or physically, like, oh, have you been eating too many GMOs, you know, or obviously you had to have done something wrong to participate in what may actually just be a really bad situation that you know, is random and sad and not at all, you have no agency in it at all, in the thing coming about.
Well, that just draws you into a kind of deep, dark theodicy situation where it's like, well, you know, God needs another angel. So that's why grandma isn't here anymore. Oh, good Lord. Don't get me started.
Right.
Or, you know, that
God has a plan.
God has a plan. God never gives you more than you can handle. Not true.
No.
But in that parsing out of where God is interacting with humanity in an active way and where God isn't, I think there are times when I feel like I get a little loose about that. You know, am I, over here, this messy thing worked out, so that's got to be the spirit. But over here, you know, God's not present in this because it's terrible. God's present in the fact that there are people who have people to live through this with each other. You know, I think that there are ways that when people especially are looking for straight answers about kind of what God's up to and what's happening, that it becomes harder to really answer those things. And then the theology can get real scary real fast.
So I just had a kid. So of course I have to like read anything that's associated with babies and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, help me figure out this thing.
Are you winning? Are you winning being the best parent of an infant? No.
I'm losing miserably. She's beating me. She's lapped me at this point. It's ridiculous. She didn't come with an instruction manual, so I got to kind of figure her out. And so I'm reading this report about like babies and justice. And the whole thing is about these babies were shown like this puppet show, and one of the puppets did something mean to another puppet, and then a third puppet came in and gave a punishment to the puppet that was mean to the first one, and the baby sided with the puppet that administered the justice. And the same thing happens when like a puppet would help another puppet. Like if there was a puppet struggling to open a box or something, and another puppet came over and helped the puppet, the weaker puppet, like open the box, the babies would be drawn to the puppet that helped the one that needed help. And it was this, the whole thing coming out of the research was that there's this inherent need in human beings for justice. We just don't, we can't really articulate it until later, but it's there. It's kind of ingrained in us. We like for bad things to happen to people that were bad, and we like good things to happen to people that were good. And you know, the thing about sports that's different from any other form of entertainment is that the results supposedly aren't predetermined. Anything can happen on a sports field. It doesn't matter what narrative you've created for yourself. It doesn't matter if you're a Cornhusker and you're the good guys that need to beat the bad guys that are the other team. The final score is going to be what it's going to be, and maybe you're going to lose. But the struggle, I think, becomes, you know, and this sort of speaks to this vassal argument that you've got. Well, when we lose, where is the justice? Where is the justice when we lose? And that's when people start to drive themselves crazy. And I think that sports brings that out, because there isn't that predetermined quality. There isn't that script. Like, the script would be that the Lakers would win every season, right? But that script doesn't exist. Like, they're not going to win every season.
Well, I haven't cared much about the Lakers since, like, maybe 1990. So, I don't know about them.
Aww.
But I don't know. I think it's the...
Well, I don't know, but somehow this whole thing has made me start to think a little bit about, like, cheating and, like, juicing. And
juicing, really? Not my juicer.
You're doing like carrots, no. Carrots and kale.
Kale's like huge.
Steroids.
I got it. You lay down some knowledge, Liz. Go for it.
But like when Lance Armstrong was caught cheating, for example, I think a lot of people felt justified because they were like, of course, I've been saying this all along. How could the human body do these things? A lot of people felt personally let down, as if that he had sinned against them personally because he violated the rules of a game. But also, you know, morally and ethically, it does kind of make you think about how do we raise our kids when they play sports? To what extent do they value winning over everything else when it gets to a certain point? I know when they're little and playing like the soccer where they all chase the ball around like a bunch of bees in a beehive, that's one thing. And you're like, everyone wins. But when it gets to a certain place, it's a pretty serious business
and that happens real fast.
Right. Which is real crazy. Fast.
And even when it is the beehive running around, there's still a parent who gives a lot of dams about what's happening. And they're like, come on, Johnny, what do you think you're doing? Get over there with the balls over there. What are you doing? You know, and you're like, slow down.
Even the kids that we know, that we interact with on a daily basis who are in sports teams, a whole bunch of their value, they're probably not thinking about going pro. But a lot of their value in school has to do with, do you play sports well? And I think that I know that's certainly true for boys, obviously, and historically it has been. But for girls too, there's this kind of like, I'm going to do it all mentality in high school girls. And you have to be a straight A student and in the AP classes and this or that. And you also need to be on a varsity sports team. And that makes you kind of like a well-rounded young woman.
But at the same time, I really see, you know, because there's sports requirements here at Episcopal and you know, that every student plays on a team sport of some kind, really? You know, during their time here in high school, like during their 4 years. I mean, it's not all varsity. It's JV. It's, you know,
like
it's
debate
things.
A sport? Is chess a sport?
No, playing on an actual sports team of some kind. So, like, winter track, spring track, fall track, you know, I mean, a lot of those sorts of things.
Population of kids who are just miserable.
Oh, sure. I think that's true for some kids.
But then I think
there's also the element of challenge where there are kids who've gone and done something that they weren't quite sure about. They've taken a risk of some kind and it pays off or it doesn't. But there's something that's learned in that. There's something that's learned in trying to learn something new, especially in an area where you can take a risk and try a sport you've never tried before. And feel kind of like, okay, I'm giving this a go. And be able to experience having other people cheer for you in a way, you know, and wearing, you know, your school colors on you and being out and doing that. You know, but do I think that the same amount of camaraderie is happening with the kids who are doing theater? Yes, I do. I mean, they're going off to a state competition in theater this weekend, you know, so I think we even turn the things that we might think are non-competitive competitive to have, you know, have people have that competitive experience as well.
What is a rebel to do in high school anymore? Like, what are kids smoking behind the bleachers to do?
No, there's a competition. How many cigarettes can they smoke? And you see, and then
I know nothing about things like that.
You're making it hard to be anti-establishment over there at Episcopal.
Why do you say this? No, like we just had the Seminary Hill Cup where our high school was going against another Episcopal high school that were all on the hill together, and that all the girls teams participated. And so JV and varsity and whichever school won the most games won the cup. And it was a really fun, unifying event for the whole group, you know, even little girls on campus out, you know, Ruby had E's painted on her cheeks and were out cheering. Yeah, and so there's, I think being a person who grew up playing sports, there's something about that that's exciting to me. I like it.
So I'm going to introduce another one more concept for conversation, then we'll move on to our next segment. But
throw like a girl, because that's good, good. It's good to throw like a girl. I throw like a girl.
So we're in our churches, and I don't know how many reports I've read about numbers. Right? It's all a numbers game. It's all about the Episcopal churches is dying because we don't have the numbers, or look at this mega church and look at how many people are going there. And I see this all the time. I see it play out in parishes where, you know, in my position, for instance, where I'm the director of children and youth ministries, I get together with my colleagues once a year in January at the Forma conference. This year it's going to be in Houston. And, you know, I've heard so many of my colleagues say, well, you know, my rector says that I need to get the number of kids participating up to a certain level, or my vestry wants a certain percentage of our parish children participating in these programs. And I think to myself, well, that's crazy. That's going to be a losing battle. How in the world are you going to be sort of this attractor for these things? Why can't you just run your program, you know, the way that you want to run? And I think it's, you know, it's because of this whole spirit of competition. Like, well, what is the church down the street doing? Well, how can we compete with that? How can we get those kids to come to our church instead of going to that church? And I don't know. It makes me uncomfortable, but I sort of see these numbers kind of playing out almost like a competition amongst churches to try to get people in the doors. And I don't know if that sort of ties in, but it feels like it kind of ties into this conversation.
Well, you're the coach and the recruiter then, right? You know, your record, if you're not winning,
right,
then yeah, you're out. You know, how you doing with your big rival? How's that going? You know, right. And so if your record's not so hot compared to what they're doing, maybe they're going to, you know, your place is going to be like, well, time for Greg to hit the road and we're going to get somebody who can play better acoustic guitar and do whatever, you know. But yeah, I mean, it puts you in the coach recruiter, you know, position. Mm-hmm. And I think oftentimes parish leaders, clergy leaders, lay ordained, you do end up in that because you're not only rallying other troops from outside, you're rallying your folks inside, you know, your Sunday school teachers or your, you know, this group and that group. And you are coach to some extent.
I mean, this plays out across the board. I mean, it's like we all went to CDSP for seminary, mm-hmm. Church Divinity School of the Pacific. Wonderful seminary.
Yay.
Great seminary. Yes. But they're competing for students. Yeah. They're competing for the same students. You know, they don't want, you know, they want people to go there instead of VT, you know, instead of Virginia, instead of ETS, instead of Seminary of the Southwest. I mean, you know, like what... At some point, you know, is it about the work that you're doing or is it about the number of people that you've got coming in? Right.
Right. And there's so much that can't be measured. I mean, I do believe in the value of numbers and of keeping track of the numbers. I think it can be an important tool to show us where we're growing and where we're not and to see things kind of across the board. But there's so much that cannot be measured by numbers at all. So, you know, the deepening of faith. Are the kids in your group, youth group, having a better time making tough moral decisions than the kids at the youth group down the street? You can't judge that, you know.
Right.
So it's tricky. And for me, here in the state of Nebraska, where small towns are declining in a lot of places, just the populations of small towns are changing. And because of that, even more than maybe in some other places, the character of churches are changing. Every time I visit a church in a small community, they're telling me stories about the church on the edge of town, the evangelical church, the mega church,
right,
you
right.
know, and there's this a sense of competition between them. You know, all of the new families that moved to town are going to that church and not to ours. And I've kind of adopted a rising tide lifts all boats mentality and trying to show people that, like, this is really, at the end of the day, this is all about Jesus. And however you find him, we need to be celebrating each other's successes, you, no matter how. And that's hard. Obviously, that's so hard.
Because I think the sports motif, like, Greg, you were talking about it either being win, lose. I mean, it forces you. That's a dichotomy that we force onto a lot of things. You know, like, I remember being a chaplain at a bishop's election. And, you know, this notion of saying it isn't that this person won the election, this person lost the election. It's that, you know, God was moving through the community in this particular way at this particular time. And this is where and upon who things have landed. And if they are up for that. And that's a more gray area than the winning or losing just like puts, you know, covers that eye of God, that will of God to really come in and be present in some way and helping the people discern where they feel called to be.
And yet if you're losing programs because you can't support them because you don't have the pledge money coming in, or if God forbid you're shutting down your parish because you've lost all of your members and, you know, you have to sell your building. Right. Or something like that.
Well, I think
then all of a sudden it does feel like
it does feel like losing. But is it in the way that there? You know, we talk a lot about things like metamorphosis and the things that have to die in order for the new thing to grow. The cracks that have to show up for the light to come through. I mean, we've all talked about these different kinds of metaphors over and over again. You know, and I imagine, Liz, there are hard conversations that you all run into in your work in terms of who's staying open, what's viable. What's pastorally responsible to a community that's struggling?
Yeah, it's amazing. But then at the same time, you have these stories of congregations who will have maybe five people there on a Sunday, and their faithfulness is astounding. You know, I mean, it is such an incredible image of the kingdom of God that, you know, I don't know. It's tough.
It's all a part of it goes back to, for me, into that yearning for community. We're all yearning for community. We're all yearning for these people that we connect to, yearning for people who are on the same page with us. You know, for some people, that's church. For some people, that's sport. For some people, it's their kids' school. But that everybody's kind of seeking that community hold where you can kind of say, all right, we're all on the same page here. And as long as we're focused in the butts and the pews, you know, as long as that's kind of the conversation and attracting people, I feel like we're just going to be stuck. I feel like that is not attractive to people.
Right.
No one wants to be seen as a number.
The great thing about sports, though, is that it's one of the last sources of mass culture, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Sports is like the one place that I'm confident that holds people of all walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it holds people who have absolutely zero in common. At least they both love, like, the Oakland A's, you know? I mean, it's one of those uniters. And we talk about, in our denomination especially, you know, hey, we're this big umbrella, and hey, everybody's welcome at the table, and hey, you know, here we are. We're all part of the body of Christ. And yet, the place where I see that actually lived is in a stadium with fans who all support the same team. Like, that's the big umbrella.
Yeah, for me, a lot of what I think about sports, I'm really just observing and imagining because I've never been part of that community. But at least here in Nebraska, it really truly does cross cultural, all kinds of cultural barriers. But actually the church kind of does too, because being sort of the polite people that we are, we don't talk about politics too much in church. It seems like that's probably why Nebraska fans are considered to be like the nicest, most happy, cheerful fans at football games, because it's kind of part of our cultural identity to be super nice people.
I tend to think that, you know, and I see this with my kids a lot too, working with youth especially, because you're dealing with a community that's really trying to figure out who they are. And especially when they're in high school, in middle school is where it kind of starts, but especially in high school, they're trying to figure out who they are in relationship to who everybody else is.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to figure out who, where their place is in the midst of, you know, all of these other personalities around them. And, you know, I see that kind of reflected more in the team analogy, like in the sports team analogy than anywhere else. Because I think, you know, when it comes to being part of a sports team, you have a very clearly defined role on that team. Whether it's the position that you play, whether it's, you know, what kind of skills you bring to the table, something like that. And I feel like that's a better kind of fit or a better kind of analogy for churches. You know, I hear parishes, I hear rectors a lot in parishes say, oh, well, we're kind of a family, or this is kind of a family dynamic. And I feel like team is a better description than family, because I feel like families come with all kinds of baggage that you can't necessarily, you can't necessarily choose. You just kind of fall into that mix. But a team, you can choose. You can kind of choose which team you're going to belong to and what your role on that team is. And so I wonder if that's a better way to think about parish life, is that you become a member of a team rather than a member of a family, a church family.
Yeah, I think I definitely, if you're looking at parish ministry on the positive side of things, like, I think that when clergy especially relate the parish to a family, they're maybe thinking about family systems and family history and like how to figure out why what's going wrong is going wrong. You know, but with a team analogy, it really would be about equipping the saints for ministry, you know, that I'm not good with sports analogy, but like something, the shortstop or something, and you want to equip that person to fill that role in the best way that they possibly can be, and also to discern, help them discern and help the whole community discern what position they are best suited for.
Yes. This is the segment of the show where we confess our love for something that exists in the popular culture that may not get as much love as it deserves. And this week, in honor of competition, the spirit of competition, we are confessing our favorite reality show competition that exists out there. Betsy, what is your favorite reality show competition?
Well, here's the thing. I am nothing if not consistent. So I actually have three favorite shows that I've watched them like every season, and I don't stop. So I love The Amazing Race. I always win in the Emmy, but nice. Then my other two get nominated. So I like Top Chef, big fan, and then I also like Project Runway. So even though Project Runway...
Sticking with the Project Runway.
Project Runway has almost lost me a couple of times. But now I find, you know, that with these shows, typically, they are shows I can watch kind of, sort of, with my seven-year-old. There's some things she's not getting that might be going on the show, which is fine. But then there'll only be the times, like occasionally in The Amazing Race, where we kind of have to say, I'm like, well, he didn't speak very nicely to his partner, did he? And so just, you know, filtering, editing, narrating, you know, saying, highlighting good behavior and, you know, downplaying the poor behavior. But the, you know, Survivor, I was with that for a while, and then that fell away. American Idol, the same. It was gone. So it's kind of more these shows where I think I'm also kind of interested in the industry in general. So I like the fashion part, I like the food part, and I like air travel. I don't know. I like travel.
Oh, man.
So what about you?
My favorite show, well, it's not my favorite show, but I'm in the middle of it right now, and it just makes me appreciate it more and more, and that's Ink Master. And this year, actually, it has a twist.
Well, hold on, what channel is this on?
I think it's on Spike. It's probably on something towards the end of your cable dial, right? It's probably
the problem. Esquire channel? I don't know.
It's one of those, like, Esquire... Something that probably has like MMA fighting on at 1 o'clock in the morning. Like it's one of those channels. It's called Ink Master. It's hosted by Dave Navarro. In this particular cycle, they're doing a rivalry theme. So they've got two tattoo artists from the same shop going after each other to see who's the better tattoo artist. And that's what it is. It's a show about who's the best tattoo artist in the country. And I guess what I appreciate about it is that this is a world that I know very little about. And so I've been learning a lot about the culture of tattoo artists over the course of, I think this is the fourth season that the show has been on. And what I've learned is that tattoo artists are big and burly and, you know, kind of rough around the edges, like you would expect a tattoo artist to be, but at their chewy, soft center, they are artists. They're like any artist you've ever known, who's just some total, you know, anxiety ridden, like, you know, obsessive personality who just sort of like focuses on one line. And it's like, oh, what can I say with that one line going across here? Or what can I do with that color palette, you know, stretching off over into the background over here, you know? And, you know, that's how they think. They think spatially. They think constructively. They think artistically. And they have that kind of artistic demeanor, that kind of artistic mentality that sort of lends itself towards dramatics and...
Well, Liz, what about you? What's your favorite reality show?
I don't really watch it.
Side one. Do you not watch any reality competition shows?
I do. Like, if I'm staying... I don't have cable.
Mm.
Not that they're all on cable, but it seems like the really kind of funny ones are on cable, or like the really niche-y ones. But when I travel a lot, so when I stay in motels and have cable, then I will get kind of caught up. And the ones that I've watched that were interesting, I don't know what it's called, but I think it's on Sci-Fi, where they do like theater makeup.
Oh yeah. What is it? It's not Face Off. That's the movie with Nick Cage.
No, but it might be
called Face Off.
It might be called Face Off.
It could be. It could be.
But I saw one where each team was had to make a character who looked like a tree. Or no, it wasn't just a tree. It was a type of disease that can affect trees. So, like, someone was fungus. Someone.
Wow.
I mean, it was crazy. But that was actually pretty amazing. And the ones that I like are the ones where people are really creative and showing off their skills. Mm-hmm. So that one and the tattoo one. And I saw one recently that was probably like a cake competition, but ultimately they were carving a pumpkin. It's totally insane. I mean, it was amazing.
So this is our Go In Pieces segment, where we let people know where they can find us on Twitter or Facebook or at our parishes or our parish websites. So where can people find you, Betsy?
People can find me. I'm on Twitter, and I'm Betsy Gons on Twitter, and or Betsy underscore Gons, sorry. And I work at Episcopal High School in the great state of Virginia, in the lovely city of, I should say, the Commonwealth of Virginia, the lovely city of Alexandria.
So Liz, where can people find you and get in touch with you online or in the great Nebraska area?
Yeah. I am the canon to the ordinary in the Diocese of Nebraska, which means I work out of Omaha, but I'm traveling all the time. So you can find me on a highway somewhere most of the time. Or you can find me at Twitter at Liz East or on Instagram at diocese_of_Nebraska, which is a terrible handle, but it's all we've got.
That's fine. That works fine. And my name is Greg Knight, and you can find me at Bethesda by the Sea Episcopal Church in Palm Beach, Florida, where I serve as the Director of Children and Youth Ministries. You can find us online at bbts.org. If you're looking for Popping Collars, we're all over the place. We're on Twitter at Popping Collars, Facebook, Popping Collars. Yeah, just enter Popping Collars in the search, you'll find us. And you can email us at poppingcollarspodcast@gmail.com. And finally, we're on Stitcher. So if you're looking for a podcast, you can find us at stitcher.com. We're not on iTunes yet because Apple kind of hates us, but we're working it out. In the meantime, that's Popping Collars for this week. So keep those collars popped. We'll see you next time. What?